So, Mike, after Billy leaves the Unexpected to join the Olivers, what happened to the Unexpected?
I think we kind of fell apart, but we might have played a little bit after that. It's really hard to think about that. It's a long time ago.
And you joined another band for a brief time period?
Yeah, I played with the Shillings for a little bit.
The Vachons.
Yeah.
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 What are the Vachons?
The Vachons are Jerry and Dick. Jerry's a guitar player, but he was playing bass then. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of changes because in the Shillings, eventually Jerry played lead guitar, Jack Vobel played bass, Don Vobel played rhythm guitar, Dick Vachon was on drums, and Bob Sharon was on keyboards.
Yeah.
There were two separate bands, the Vachons and the Shillings?
No, they were the Shillings.
Oh, they
Jerry
were?
Jerry and Dick were, there was two sets of brothers and Bob Sharon, and I played with them for a while.
And Jerry played bass with us in the Shadows and the Unexpected.
Yeah.
Now, I understand in early 1966, Al Russell is back again with the Olivers and makes a connection with CAP, a recording studio in Portage, Michigan. And the band records another 45, I Saw What You Did, backed with Beaker Street, released on the Phalanx label. Billy, are you on this 45?
Yes.
Okay, what do you recall about recording this 45?
I remember driving up to do it. Later I saw all these photographs that they found in Italy of the session, and I don't even remember there being a photographer in the room. We were just trying to get a good take, on the songs, and we recorded the two songs both in an afternoon, and it turned out pretty doggone good.
This is a professional recording studio, CAP?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was it like 4-track or 8-track?
I think it was 4.
Okay. And this is also with the help of Dino Enterprises and Mary Jane Hamrick again?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we got the record made and paid for the recording and mixed it up. And yeah, Mary Jane helped us put it out.
Is Phalanx the band's own label? Is that...
I don't know.
That was the CAP Studios label.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because there, before that, the original two records was on Nymphras,
right?
Which is Surfman spelled backwards.
Yeah. Oh.
So they had the Surfman had their own label, but this Phalanx, I'm not sure who that was. I don't know if it was Dino or.
I think it was CAP.
CAP. You think it was
from the studio? Yeah.
And somebody is able to get this 45 to RCA, correct?
Yes, they. I believe Dino.
Dino and Mary Jane.
And Mary Jane decided, we needed to talk to somebody else, and get it, try and move the record forward, once we got it pressed up. So I remember being in Indianapolis in the office, and I think they were on a conference or a speaker phone thing or a call, and they were talking about it, and... It was when he was talking to RCA Victor, and they said over the speaker thing that they wanted it. They wanted the record.
Now, when you say he was talking, who are you referring to?
Like Dino.
Dino.
Norman. Yeah. Norman V.
Yeah, Norman.
Okay, so it does come out on RCA then?
They did. They picked it up and they put it out on RCA Victor. I think it went into was it in the 50s or the 40s or... Something
I don't
on
remember.
The one week there was every week the chart thing would come out, the Hot 100,
the Billboard
Hot 100. Yeah, the Billboard. Mm-hmm. That's it. And we got up halfway up, as I remember, somewhere in the 50s or the 40s.
And then what happened?
And it just died.
Did you ever hear it on the radio?
Well, we heard it locally a lot.
Yeah.
Locally. But I don't know what kind of airplay we had. It seemed to me like it had a bullet for a while when it entered the charts.
Yep.
And got up into the 50s or the 40s, and then it just went away.
Are you singing on it?
Background on the B-side.
Okay. What does Beaker Street refer to?
Well, didn't we ask Carl? And Carl said it was a street in...
England.
England?
That's what I thought. But didn't he say it was a street in a local street?
Oh, in Fort Wayne?
Yeah. I can't remember. Do you remember what he said?
I remember that the Oliver's name came from a street in Fort Wayne, but I don't remember the Beaker Street part of it.
I don't remember either. And you know what? I talked to him on the phone, and he told me the story, and now I can't remember it. Where the Beaker thing come from.
Okay, so basically nothing really comes as far as the record never becomes a hit.
Well, you know, we made the charts.
Locally.
That was pretty good for us.
Yeah. I think the problem was that they didn't follow up. They sent out copies to the radio stations, and it got some airplay, but they didn't follow up with copies in the stores. Because I personally went and looked in stores all over the place, couldn't find it anywhere.
Oh, so the distribution wasn't being followed up on by RCA.
Yeah, I think it was called tax deduction for RCA.
Could have been. I still have a check.
A check?
Yeah, $5.25.
A royalty check? That you never cashed?
Never cashed it.
Really?
I didn't even get one of those.
From RCA? Yeah. Really? All right, so...
It was so much money, why didn't you cash it?
Yeah!
I hate that.
Just think how far I'd go now.
Maybe I should go try and cash it. Yeah, I don't know.
So next in my notes here, I see in September 1966, Jay Pendorf was drafted into the military service. And Mike, what happened at that point?
Well, Billy contacted me and asked me if I wanted to join, and I thought about it for about 2 milliseconds, and said sure.
So you become a member of the Olivers.
Yep.
All right. So now, at this point in time, who's all in the Olivers?
Carl Aldrich on keys. Chuck Hamrick on drums, Billy on bass, and me on guitar. Me, Mike Mankey.
All right. Looking at my notes, in 1967, Carl Aldrich leaves the band due to artistic differences with other band members, and Rick Durrett joins the band on keyboards. Where was Rick from?
Nashville, Tennessee. He played with a band called Cardboard Box. We met him in Indianapolis because... Cardboard Box was playing some of the same places that the Olivers were playing.
So now it's Rick, Mike, Billy, and Chuck, right?
Yeah.
Well, for a while, Jay, and then he left.
Yeah.
Right.
Wait a minute.
So does this version of the band in 1967 ever come to Minneapolis to play?
Well, we must have, because Rick was in the band when we recorded.
Right, Dove. Right. Mm-hmm. So we did, while we were doing recording, or just... In that time period, we did play some gigs in the metro area.
But this is this is 1967 now.
Yeah.
Did the band regularly tour?
Yeah, we were all over the Midwest.
Yeah.
You toured the upper Midwest mostly, or?
Mm-hmm. Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, Michigan, not so much
down
Minnesota.
Kentucky.
Yeah, Kentucky. Not so much Minnesota at first.
Iowa.
And I understand the band opened up for a number of national acts. Can you name some of those acts?
A lot of them. The Stones, the Jefferson Airplane, the Hollies,
yeah.
The Yardbirds, yeah, the Birds, Standells, Bob Seger, The Who, many times. Blue Cheer. We were just talking about that, weren't we?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, those guys were loud. Jefferson Airplane, yeah, I remember that one.
That was Indiana Beach. That was a fun night.
There was remember we used to open for Rotary Connection?
Oh, yeah, forgot about that. Yeah, yeah. Rotary Connection was another one.
Rotary Connection from Chicago.
Yeah.
Minnie
Riperton.
Minnie Riperton and her husband.
Okay, so I see in September 1968, Jay Pendorf got back after finishing his 2 years in the military service and rejoined the group on guitar and vocals. So now you're back to a five-piece. What happens next in the life of the Olivers?
Okay, we've kind of argued about the timing on this, but But after Jay got out of the Army and rejoined the band was when we got all of the original songs together that we recorded at Dove Studios. And we did some gigs around there. You know, remember when we were five-piece for a while before we recorded, and then for a while after, and then Jay went back in the service? Yeah, it's
so hard to remember that stuff. Mm. You know, it got tumultuous there. When Jay left the band, it got, you know, and you came in, things started changing a lot. You know, the sound of the band changed. Carl didn't like it. He left. Rick came in. It was just, it got kind of helter-skelter there for a while. I can't remember a lot of that stuff. Things were happening too fast.
So in the winter of 69, you somehow wound up at Dove Recording Studio. How did you find Dove Recording Studio?
We came up and played. Didn't we? Yeah. Didn't we play a couple of gigs that week?
And then we met Pete Steinberg from Candy Floss, and that's when he talked about having us up to record.
How did you meet Pete Steinberg?
Oh, boy.
Well, I already knew Pete before.
That's right, yeah, because he'd come up to do session work sometimes.
Yeah, he'd call me up and say, I need you to play bass on some records, you know. And so they'd do sessions, and he'd fly me up to Minneapolis, and he'd fly a drummer up from Jim Koss. Remember mm-hmm. Jim Koss?
Boys Next Door.
The Boys Next Door, yeah. A band from Indianapolis. They were a Beach Boys band, mm-hmm. and they did the Beach Boys well. They did them really good.
So you had already been to Dove Recording?
I had been there, yes. And Pete said, why don't you bring your band up here and record? And I said, okay, I'll ask the guys. But I knew as soon as I said, you guys want to record? You know, everybody was like, yeah!
No.
So we came up and played a couple of gigs. And while we were up here, did the sessions a couple of days or 3 days or over the period of time.
I think it was 3 days, yeah.
Yeah.
So the band that goes into Dove is the five-piece band, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. How long are you at Dove doing this recording session for the album?
We were there like maybe 2 days or 3 days.
3 days. 20, yeah. I think it was 21 hours total, but in a three-day period.
Yeah, so that would have been like about 17 recording, and because the last day we mixed for 4 hours. With mm-hmm. everything that we recorded, we just pumped it, put it up, and it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really a mix. It was kind of a rough mix. We were trying to get a copy of the songs to take with us, so we rough mixed them real quick in about 4 hours, and we still didn't get a copy.
Now these are all original songs.
Yes.
Who wrote the songs?
I wrote two, and Billy wrote all except for.
Did we do a Jay tune or was it
we did,
Rick?
We did one of Rick's, one of Jay's, two of mine, and the rest were yours.
Yeah, but you were in on a couple of mine, weren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, we did some stuff together. But.
Were you doing the songs live with some overdubs, or?
Oh, yeah.
In our studio, we overdubbed so we could, you know, concentrate better on the leads and do the vocals better, but we had no overdubbing live.
Yeah, that's right. We did do the solos we overdubbed.
Yeah, guitar solos.
Yeah.
And vocals.
Yeah. We did the vocals separate. Live, we did everything mm-hmm. at once. But in the studio, we did the vocals separate. We did the guitar leads separate.
We didn't do a lot of that, though.
No. It was almost like a live recording, mostly live.
Yeah.
Why don't you run through the song titles and state who wrote each song?
Ooh.
Number one, Ball of Fire, Billy Franzi. Number two, Mushroom, Jay Pendorf.
One of my favorites.
Number three, yeah, me too. Jessica Ryder, Billy Franzi. Someday Somewhere, Billy Franzi. Side two, The End, Rick Durrett. Free, Mike Mankey, me. Social Slavery, me, Mike Mankey.
Okay, and what are you guys using for guitars on this record?
I played a SG, I think it was the special that had the humbuckers. The standard had the black pickups, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it was a special then, because I had actually switched it from from a standard to the special. It came with the black pickups, but I put humbuckers on it.
Came with P90s.
And he put humbuckers.
And what kind of amp?
You were playing Fender, weren't you?
Yeah, I think I was playing Fender then. But when we were on the road, we used Super Beatles.
Okay, and what kind of effects did you have on the guitar?
Just fuzz tone.
Fuzz tone?
Not much, yeah.
Mainly just to get it, to punch it up a little bit for volume, give it a little bit more sustain buzz than I had normally. Yeah.
So that's a pedal, a fuzz tone pedal?
Yep.
How about a wah-wah pedal?
I had one, but I didn't use it recording.
Okay. Billy, how about you? What kind of guitar did you use on the session?
Isn't there a photo of us in the studio? What have I got there? Can you see it?
I think it might have been your.
I don't.
Was it your Precision?
Was it?
It had a whole bunch of basses.
Yeah, it would have been. It was either a Telecaster.
Yeah.
Because I remember using the Telecaster on sessions up there for Pete.
Yeah.
It was either that or it was a baby blue Precision.
Yeah, that was nice.
One of those two.
Are you doing bass or guitar on this?
I'm doing bass.
I was doing bass.
You're doing bass on this. Okay. And the amplifier?
Didn't we use all Fenders in that recording?
We might have.
Yeah, because I think we borrowed them too.
I think I used the amp that the studio had.
Yeah.
And what is Rick Durrett using for a keyboard?
He had Rick had a Hammond organ.
A
B100.
Was it
A100?
Oh, okay. A100.
Mm-hmm. And two Leslies, the tall boys. Then he had a Baldwin harpsichord with the actual strings shaped like a little grand piano up on top of the Hammond.
Yeah,
and he used to kill that thing. He played that thing through a fuzz tone.
Yeah.
The harpsichord?
Mm-hmm. Through
and he had a tuning key. And he would hit a note on the keyboard and detune it like a guitar. Mm-hmm. Bending notes. He used to play Hendrix songs on the...
on a harpsichord.
It's wild. Wild stuff.
On the last song on the album, he does a lot of kind of special effects on Social Slavery.
And how about on the vocals? Did you do effects on the vocals too or not?
Just if we did, it was just reverb.
Just reverb.
Yeah.
Was Steinberg giving you directions on how to record and or not?
He turned us loose pretty good.
He
liked our material, and he said, "You guys know what you're doing. You know, play your songs."
Okay.
So I like that. I like being in control of my own songs.
Yeah.
But he wasn't too pushy about anything. He wanted us to get a good take.
And Jay is, I understand, playing an Epiphone with a fuzz tone pedal and a wah-wah pedal. Does that sound right?
Yeah, maybe. He had a guitar with a Bigsby.
Yeah, he borrowed that from me.
Yeah.
What's a Bigsby?
It's a tremolo bar.
Tremolo bar on a guitar.
Whammy bar.
Okay. Now, Mike, you told me that Pete Steinberg had a connection with Sire Records out of New York, and they had expressed an interest in putting out the Olivers album.
That's what he told us when we first got together and did it. It just never happened.
That never happened.
Yeah.
Did Pete tell you there were other record labels interested? Or
he didn't communicate that to me that much, but. I don't even remember him talking about Decca, but didn't the acetate end up at Decca?
I'm not sure.
Yeah,
but I remember him talking about Decca. He seemed to seems like he was saying that the deal that they offered was better than
Sire.
Yeah.
Was this when you're still here, or when you're back in Fort Wayne?
It was when we came back.
As Triad.
Yeah, when we moved.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
either that or it was on the phone.
Okay.
I don't remember.
So when you left Minneapolis and went back to Fort Wayne, were you thinking that your album was going to be released on Sire or a major label of some sort?
Yeah,
it was. That's what he thought. He thought it was going to, at first he thought it was going to be Sire.
Okay. And you left without any acetate or tape recording of the album at all?
I think we all knew we were going to come back.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, so you thought you would come back and get a copy of something?
Yeah. We did ask for acetates or a tape copy of the album because, you know, we'd like to hear it. but we never got them. I think that might be how the acetate that we finally got 40 years later came to being.
Yeah, that you might be right on there.